Welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host Ken Foster, head of the Agricultural Economics Department. What's shaking, Ken?
Well, I'll tell you, Jessica, finally we've got some weather outside with some blue skies and some, you know, not too many clouds, and it's not raining.
You mean it actually feels like summer?
It actually, finally here in the middle of July, is starting to feel like summer.
Yeah, but for how long? Probably going to start raining again if we follow the pattern.
Well, it's going to be fall before we know it, even if it doesn't rain. So, well, so we have to enjoy it while we can.
Well, that's very apropos of what we're going to talk about today, which is the huge abundance of rainfall we've had this summer and its impact on crops and production.
Yeah, and I think normally, you know, we view our weather here in this part of the country as a positive thing, you know, in terms of rainfall. Compare ourselves to California, for example, where they've been suffering terrible droughts and their agriculture has actually had to reduce acreage just to deal with water shortages. And here we are in Indiana with more water this year than we might have wanted.
And so we've got
an expert on this subject with us today who knows what's going on out there in terms of the weather, but also what it's doing to the farm economy.
We do indeed, and that would be Dr. Chris Hurt. Dr. Hurt, Chris, how are you?
Doing great.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on.
So, Chris, maybe give us just a little highlight, especially for people who haven't been outside lately, or maybe who aren't here in Indiana and don't know what's been happening.
Or maybe they haven't been outside because they've been trying to get the water out of their basement.
That's possible, too. I've been there this year.
Well, we had record rainfall in Indiana. That also spanned Illinois and Ohio. And record is 121 years of data that the National Weather Service keeps. So June, the wettest on record for Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. Now, we put Missouri in the same category. They did not have record statewide rainfall. But crop conditions have been very deteriorated in Missouri as well. So really going west, east, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and the worst of these is the state of Indiana.
Oh boy, yes. So put that in perspective for me. Record rainfall in June would be how many inches?
Well, normally we would have around 5 inches, just a little over an inch per week of rainfall. So we had areas of Indiana that received over 20 inches. So we're talking quadruple the normal rainfall amount.
Wow.
Now, that rainfall didn't just stop July 1. So we're now around the third week of July, and we've had well above normal rainfall for the state of Indiana, and all of this area that's been wet for July may be on track for a record, but that's going to depend, of course, on the rest of July. So really we're looking at probably about 7 weeks where we've had at least double to as much as quadruple normal rainfall.
So Chris, besides this extra rainfall blocking my bike path down by the Wabash River since it's clearly flooded the banks, what does this mean for agriculture here in the state?
Well, obviously, we get the most data on corn and soybeans simply because they're such big crops. Through this Missouri to Ohio area. And USDA does a crop rating every week, and that's released on Monday afternoon. And so we do have five categories that enumerators rate the crop around each of our major states. And the two bottom categories are very poor condition, which is crop is gone or could be in the process of failing. Very poor and poor are the bottom two conditions. And currently, Indiana has 26% of the corn acreage that's in those two categories, 28% of the soybeans. Then the other states that are right behind us are Ohio, would be the second worst among the wet states at this point, and then Illinois and Missouri. So those four states keep coming out that we have at least 15% up to nearly 30% of the crops are severely damaged by this wet weather in those four states.
That's a big impact. What does that mean for the farmers themselves?
Well, obviously, we don't know the full extent of yield reductions, but we think this probably can be minimum of 5% yield reductions up to perhaps as much as 15%. One of the reasons that we have uncertainty is we still have a good bit of the growing season to go. And crops can recover, particularly soybeans, can still recover quite a bit in late July, August, and early September. Another thing that it makes this one very uncertain this year is it's really unusual to have a extremely wet flooding summer. Now, we have springs in the Midwest that are really wet. We have some good measures from analogous years. We can go back and look at yields. But this June, July heavy, heavy rainfall is really quite unusual. So we don't have a good basis of comparison. USDA will be starting to do objective evaluations in early August. They're going to have their yield estimates and production estimates, at least their first round, August 12th. So we're kind of, most of us, stepping back at this point and saying lots of discouragement. Certainly there's lots of acres that flooded out, drowned out with ponding. But then probably bigger impact is the stunted crops. They crop held on, it's still alive, but it's trying to recover, and it just hasn't too many weeks, basically 7 weeks here, where we've had this continuous process of too much water. So we don't know the full extent. We'll know a little better in August, but over time, of course, we'll see the true impact of this very wet weather. But it's certainly negative for those states.
And it seems as you drive across the countryside, there's a lot of corn out there that either has been underwater so long that the nitrogen has denitrified and it's gone off into the atmosphere, or they just didn't get in to put nitrogen on it.
What does that mean? If the nitrogen,
just, you know, when you when the soil is flooded, then you drive the air out and you create an anaerobic environment. So you have some bacteria that live in that anaerobic environment with no oxygen that consume the nitrogen, and they belch it out into the atmosphere, I guess, for lack of a better term, right? I mean, and it's gone, right? It's just literally gone. So you see this.
And the nitrogen would be essential for crop growth?
Not particularly for corn.
Particularly for corn.
So, you know, you see this almost every year. You know, if there's a little bit of heavy rainfall, there'll be a low spot in the field that, you know, the water will pond. And those anaerobic bacteria thrive in that environment. And then you'll see that low spot, that corn will never recover. It'll just turn yellow, stunted, and this year, especially, I think, Chris, if you go north of here into northwest Indiana, you just see a lot of corn that's in that state, you know, whole fields of corn stunted.
Certainly have two areas of the state, as you mentioned, the northwest part of Indiana, but also the northeast. And so this would be south of Fort Wayne somewhat, that area, roughly between Portland and Fort Wayne. Extremely heavy, over 20 inches of rainfall in the month of June. And so my guess is probably this nitrogen is going to be the single biggest factor that does affect corn. Couldn't get that nitrogen on. The other is leaching. Nitrogen's not stable in the soil with this much moisture. It tends to get washed out. And then farmers have had an inability to get back on those fields when they could to get nitrogen on. The corn that remains gets too tall. A week ago, about the middle of July, we saw farmers just throwing their hands up and giving up because they had to make decisions. Is the corn would it recover if I try to put more nitrogen on, or is it too far gone? And that's a difficult decision, but it just suggests how marginal, how close to the margin that crop is to loss. And again, we're talking in some cases. This clearly is not all of the states.
Chris, what's the worst case scenario if it keeps raining like it has been?
Well, it's not going to keep raining. I predict that eventually it will quit raining as much as it has.
You know,
now I hope everybody writes that down.
That's a safe prediction. I predict it will
eventually.
I'm not going to specify when.
Let's put it this way. I haven't heard any complaints from Chris's neighbors that he's building a large boat in the back of his house.
Well, we do have forecasts that are considered by the market at least accurate enough to take seriously 8 to 14 days out. And that really dries off the Midwest. We have fairly moderate temperatures over the next 2 weeks with really a substantial drying out. So it looks like if we accept that as the possibility, remaining July and into early August, we're going to get better conditions. Now, that's not to say it couldn't turn too dry. We also have to mention that while we have these very difficult conditions, mostly in the eastern Corn Belt, the northwest Corn Belt, the big corn states there of Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Nebraska, have an above average crop. So usually when you have these wet summers, you have some area that's 200, 300, 400 miles away that actually has very beneficial rainfall. And generally that area of the country has had normal to above normal precipitation, and the crop looks excellent. So when we put those together, depressed yield situation in the eastern Corn Belt, an enhanced situation in the western Corn Belt, and that comes out a fairly normal crop in terms of yields, and that says we probably won't have a really major impact on higher prices, somewhat higher prices, but not major.
So will there be potentially, or have there been some opportunities to price some corn a little higher already, Chris?
Yeah, we've gone, corn has gone from basically $3.50 to $4.20, $4.25 in terms of the highs. So we've had more than a 10% increase both in corn and soybeans. These years are extremely difficult for anyone to sort through what is the total impact. And one of them we still have to look at is the impact on acreage. We know acreage, particularly in Missouri, Illinois, to soybeans did not get planted. So prevented planted acreage is going to be high. Again, USDA hasn't really evaluated that yet. And then when we have this much water, we're going to have drowned out areas, areas that are not harvested. So the abandoned acres, acres that were planted but never harvested, are going to be high as well. So all of this suggests that the crop will be smaller than what we would have originally expected. We had pretty good inventories coming into this crop year, so I don't think we're talking about shortages, but what we are talking about is some better opportunities on pricing. Unfortunately, those wet states are not, on average, going to have as much yield.
What can we expect, Chris, in terms of crop insurance to help some of these farmers out that are going to be short of the crop, potentially with not much higher prices?
Well, here in Indiana, we've made a rough estimate of what's the loss in dollars of the crop that we've lost. On corn and soybeans, we estimate that about $500 million. If you put all the crops together, forage crops, wheat, fruits, vegetables, certainly it's a bigger number, $600-700 million.
Ooh, it's a hit.
It's a big hit. We're over, we think, $500 million. But there are some compensations, as Ken suggests. One of those is crop insurance. And last year, 79% of the Indiana corn and soybean acreage did have crop insurance, elected by farmers. Now, crop insurance is partially subsidized by the federal government. It is an option that farmers can elect. And it's not meant to be 100% protection. It's commonly 75 to 85% protection. And so that will help. It won't make those who had big losses totally whole, but receiving 75% is certainly a lot better than losing 100%. So that's one compensation. Another one's going to be the higher prices for what they do produce. And so we're not saying the economic loss for farm families in Indiana is $500 million, but the loss of the crop is maybe in that $500 million for corn and soybeans alone, and then there will be some compensations where they will recover some of that. Reporters have been asking, well, what does the year look like financially? And we have to say that farmers entered 2015 crop, summer crops, with anticipation of very low margins. So obviously having a short yield year is not positive to those margins. So this is going to cause, we think, a number of farm families to find themselves in financial stress, not only because of low margins overall, but because of yield losses that they're going to have due to the wet weather.
It really is eye-opening to think about how vulnerable the farmers are just to these changes in the weather.
Yeah, it's a unique business. You just you know, lots of risks in lots of businesses are things that you can manage. This is one of those ones that there's not a whole lot of latitude to manage. I mean, there are a few things you can do, as Chris mentioned, crop insurance, and But beyond that, you just sort of have to trust that the weather will turn out well for
you. Yeah, and then you think about it. I mean, you put all this work into your crops, and the rain comes, and then you just have to, I mean, you got to find it in
coming.
Yourself. Well, yeah, and then you got to find it in yourself to be like, okay, next year, another year.
Stay positive.
Just got to keep going forward.
Yeah, and I think even kind of more remarkable, that's remarkable that people will do this, and virtually, as Ken suggests, they have that almost the total investment in that crop before they ever know if they'll get anything at all or not. But amazing that the world basically has to replenish its food supply every year.
Yes.
That we have, we're talking about this vulnerability that Missouri through Ohio has had this year. But when we think about the globe, we basically have to replenish that food supply year on a yearly basis. What if we would have one of those years of very severe restrictions on a more global basis? So it is a remarkable thing that we food such a necessity for maintenance of human life, and yet we tend to talk about we have too much of it and prices are low. How can you have too much of such a vital asset like food?
Yeah. Well, Chris, Ken and I can't thank you enough for joining us. And for those of you who are listening, again, this is the Agricultural Economics Podcast. And we were joined today by Dr. Chris Hurt. You should check us out at www.agecon.purdue.edu or like us on Facebook.